Good morning. If I was to say to you, Sawa, what would you say to me? Sawa. Bit of Swahili for you, all right? Sawa means, okay, are we ready to go? And the response is, sawa, sawa. Yeah, we're ready. Great, so let's give it a try, shall we? Just to get ourselves going, because we're going to paint some big pictures this morning, particularly pictures relevant to our young people, because they're going to be carrying the can for a lot of this, so lucky you. But if I say, sawa, 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 now you've got to be, come on, sawa, 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 that's right. So the guy in the van, all right, he's ready to put the thing into gear. He says to everybody, sawa, and they all say, sawa, sawa, we're off, way, we're away. And I'd like to start with some Old Testament history. I'd like to take you back about 2,500 years to a bit of history that may well be our future. 605 BC, the very first date. 605 BC, the nation of Babylonia has conquered God's people in Judea. They've overrun the country, and large numbers of very significant and intelligent and useful people have been taken away to captivity in their capital city of Babylon. And one of them is someone we know. He's a man called Daniel. Daniel taken away in 605 as part of that group of people taken away into exile in Babylon. And meanwhile, King Nebuchadnezzar has left back in Judah a puppet king. That's not someone like Kermit the Frog. That is actually a king that Nebuchadnezzar has chosen because he is weak and stupid. And he's left him in charge of the people in Judah to make sure they don't cause any trouble. And along with the people left behind in Jerusalem is another person we know. And his name is Jeremiah. The prophet Jeremiah is in Jerusalem in 605 BC at the same time as Daniel is carried off into captivity in Babylon. And so these two big books of the Bible run very much in parallel. They're describing the same historic events from Jeremiah's perspective and then from Daniel's perspective. And Jeremiah gives the people a warning. He says, look, do not rebel against Babylon. Do not rebel against Babylon, because if you do, they will come here with terrible anger and they will wipe us out. Don't do that. But they ignore that prophecy from Jeremiah. They try to make alliances. Zedekiah tries to make alliances with people in Egypt to say, come and rescue us. Come and fight against the Babylonians for us. And Nebuchadnezzar gets to hear about it. And the next significant date we have is the 15th of January, 588 BC. Isn't it amazing that we can look down the centuries to records from Babylon itself and find that on that date, the 15th of January, 588, the Babylonians came and started to besiege the city of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem has walls 2 meters thick, and this siege goes on for over 2 years until eventually, on the 18th of July, 586 BC, the Babylonians break into the city of Jerusalem and they smash the place to pieces. There is terrible slaughter, and all those who survive are put in chains and dragged off to captivity in Babylon. And Jerusalem, the fabled city of God, the place of the temple, the place of King David, the place of everything else, is just gone. It's effectively ceased to exist. And God's people are in captivity. Why has that happened? Why have all those terrible things happened to the people of God? Well, it's time for a bit of TLC. But not TLC as we know it. Something that I'm going to call this morning the tough love cycle. And we're going to learn together about God's tough love cycle, which talks about how God relates to nations through the ages. And in a similar way, he relates to individuals as they follow him or reject him, or come back and follow him again and reject him again. This cycle we see going round and round in the Old Testament, and I believe that we see it here and now and today. So let's have a picture, shall we? Let's have a look at the tough love cycle. I wonder if you could follow that through. You see, the whole thing starts off in the middle at the top with God's incredible love for his people, God's incredible love for you and me and the promises that he makes to us. And in response to that, the people say, Lord, yes, we promise to follow you. Thank you, Lord. We promise to be your people. But it doesn't last. It never lasts. The people of the Old Testament drifted again and again into idol worship, worshiping the gods of wood and stone and self and pleasure and money and sex and power. And so God sends his prophets to warn them. He says, look, if you live this way, you will break that relationship that I want to have with you as my people. And he gives them warnings and warnings, and they come back with apologies and more promises. Oh, Lord, sorry, we shouldn't have done that. We want to start again with you. And it goes round and round to more idol worship. You see that circle at the bottom? Does that sound a bit familiar in your life and mine? We say, well, Lord, I've made such a mess of it, and I really want to start again. And God says, okay, let's start again. And then the cycle goes round again, and God says, what are you doing? Where have I found you now? Oh, Lord, how did I manage to do that? And we get ourselves in this cycle of warnings and apologies and more disobedience. And eventually there comes a time. Eventually there came a time when God could stand no more. And he said, look, if my people are going to ever come back to me in truth, there have to be consequences to the things they do. Terrible consequences, but ones that are designed to wake up my people and bring them back to me again. So I wonder where on this diagram we find the nation of Judah in 586 BC. They're right there, aren't they? At the left, accepting and feeling the consequences of disobeying God. And they hate it. They hate it. They've been taken away to Babylon. It's a weird, alien place, full of strange, warlike, dreadful people. We've found recently some stone tablets from Babylon, and they're jokes. They're actually jokes written down by the people of Babylon. They're jokes about how little you can see when someone's gouged your eyes out. They had a really weird sense of humor in Babylon, but that's the sort of place where God's people were taken. And the message of Jeremiah to these people is this. Don't expect to go back to Jerusalem anytime soon, because God has moved on. Jerusalem is no longer the city of God. God's gaze is somewhere else. And he writes a letter to the people who are in exile in Babylon. And he says, and this is the reading that Hazel read to us. You're not going to be in Babylon for a year or so. You're not going to be there just for a couple of years because God's a bit stroppy. He says, no, this is the real thing. You're going to be there for 70 years, for a couple of generations. So you need to get used to living in this alien place. Get used to it. Find homes. Settle down. Get married. Have children. You're going to be there this long. And then he says this. Seek the good of that alien city and pray for it. Be the best captive citizens in an alien land that you could possibly be. And so we have an entire nation in captivity. And listen to this. This is important. The quietly faithful people are swept along with the God haters. The ones who all the time have tried to honor God with their lives. God didn't say, you're fine, I'll look after you over here. God actually says, this is a nation thing. And the ones who trust me and quietly live for me get swept along in this tide of history. with the consequences of a nation that turns its back on God. And if we here today are trying to live for God in our own way, that doesn't mean that we won't be swept along with the tide of history as things happen in this nation of ours. Because let's have a look at the United Kingdom in the year 2013. Where do you think we are in the tough love cycle? Where would you place us? Full of promises, our nation? I don't think so. Full of apologies? I don't think so. Starting to feel consequences? Yeah, I think that's where we are. You see, we're a nation that's been extraordinarily blessed over centuries. We've been saved from the brink in two world wars just recently. We've been protected from so many of the evils and problems and difficulties in the world. Just look at what Don's just put on the screen and told us about life in Rwanda this Sunday morning. Children malnourished. A wage barely enough to feed your family. You're in hospital, terminally ill, and sorry, you're out the door because there's nothing we can do for you. We have no conception of what it means to live in circumstances like that because God has blessed us with so much financial security, with so many advantages, such a high standard of living. And yet in response to that, what have we as a nation done? We have worshipped the idols of wood and stone and heavy metal and money and sex and power and self and pleasure. We're increasingly a secular humanist society that is moving away from God. We're a few weeks down the road, aren't we, from the vote in Parliament to legalize gay marriage. Who would ever have imagined that? I can remember my very first lecture as a law student at Manchester University, more years ago than I would like to think about, and it was Professor Adrian Bromley. He was the guy who wrote the book on family law. We studied Bromley's Family Law, about 3 inches thick, and the professor used to lecture us first thing on a Monday morning. And my very first lecture was this: the definition of marriage is a legal relationship between a man and a woman. And if it isn't a man and a woman, it isn't marriage. That was the first foundation block in all that family law that was built. And we've seen it in my working lifetime swept away. In 5 years' time, when the dust has settled on this, I wonder what a teacher will say or be able to say if a little girl asks, "Does it matter if I marry a man or if I marry a woman?" What will an adopter be allowed to say? What will a parent be allowed to say? There's a judge called Judge Laws, very appropriate name. He was dealing with a case quite recently in relation to some Christian hoteliers, you may remember it. And he said these words: "It is not so very long ago that these beliefs of the defendants would be accepted as normal by society at large. Now it is the other way around." Things that we have thought of as Christian principles, as biblical Christian norms, are being turned upside down and are not accepted by the majority of people in this country. Atheism, or at least secular humanism, is our creed today. You know, even the delightful Professor Brian Cox, what a brilliant guy, so likable. I love his wonder at creation on some of these great programs that are there on the television. But time and time again, do you hear the way that Brian Cox takes us back to the fundamental laws of physics? He never gets beyond those fundamental laws of physics to a creator God. When is the last time you ever heard a mention of a creator God in the media? Because we are a nation that is in the middle of the tough love cycle. It is a nation that's in rebellion against God. And are we beginning to see the consequences of that? Are we beginning to see that in terms of a financial crisis brought about by greed? Are we beginning to see that in terms of family breakdown? So many things going wrong in our families and in our young people. Are these the effects of God just saying, all right? He says this in the book of Romans. When people reject God, he leaves them to get on with life on their own. And life on our own without God very quickly falls to pieces. Those are the consequences of being a nation that is post-Christian. And people like us, people like many of us who try to follow God in our lives, are swept along by this tide of history, and we are part of this broken nation. How do we live for God in the midst of a nation that is falling apart? And I want to address this especially for our young folk, because you're in the middle of this and you're going to continue to be in the middle of this. And I think our young people will carry this through long after many of us have gone, because this is not going to take a couple of years. This is not going to take 5 years to sort out. This is a long-term thing. And we need to get used to living in a world like this. But it's important to remember that we can still be in the place where God is working. God sent his people into Babylon to be his people there. And it's vital that we are being in the place where God is working. Because it's here, despite all the problems, despite all the stresses and strains, despite what pressures may come upon Christians, what pressures may come upon the church of God, it's here that God's blessing is going to be found. We're not going to be left alone. So how do we go about living? How do we go about living for God in a world like this? You ready to have a look at that? Are we? Sawa? Sawa, sawa. Yeah, come on. Living for God in a strange land. And what I'd like to do is just to pick up, as we close really, some examples of how Daniel and his friends managed to live for God in exile in a strange land. Because some of the ways in which Daniel did it are so contemporary, so relevant for us today. And there are things that we can pick up that will enable us to live for God relevantly today. The first one is this. We need to have godly integrity. You know, you can tell from reading the book of Daniel that Daniel is a guy you can trust. He is such a straight guy, an intelligent guy. He just knows how to get things done. But when people tried to find fault with him, they were unable to do it. Lovely verse, Daniel 6, verse 4, says that Daniel was faithful, responsible, and completely trustworthy. Now, those words that can be applied to us, faithful, responsible, completely trustworthy. If we say we're going to do something, do we do it? If we say we're going to be somewhere, are we there? And not 10 minutes late, are we there when we say we're going to be there? Are we people that other people can trust at work? Are we people to whom a job can be given? If I've given it to him, I know it's going to be sorted. That's the sort of person Daniel was. And the starting point, I think, for living in a messed up society is to be people who are different and trustworthy in that way. That's the first one. Second one is picking our battles. You know, there are things about this post-Christian society of ours that we will not like. And it's not going to get any easier. There'll be all sorts of things that we don't like. Imagine what it was like for Daniel. 100 weird, disgusting, immoral practices, I've no doubt, at every turn. But he didn't start off on a great big crusade to object to everything. He didn't get to be known as the person who always disapproved. I'm so pleased that our church has grown out of being the church that doesn't dance, the church that doesn't drink, the church that doesn't read a paper on a Sunday. We've had to grow up a little. We want to uphold the standards of God, but we do not argue about lots of little things. It's like bringing up a teenager, isn't it? We pick our battles. We have the sort of conversations that say, whoa, music is good and loud in your room today. I noticed the door handle has vibrated off again. And your hair is a wonderful shade of green. We like that. Yes, we do. It goes well with the pink and orange of your large earrings, my son. And but we pick our battles, all right? We choose the things to stand for, and we don't niggle about everything else. We're not seen to be people who have little agendas. We're trustworthy and we work on the big things. Another thing Daniel was so successful at doing was building relationships. You know, when he got taken off into captivity, some of them were taken to the king's palace to be taught special things for service to King Nebuchadnezzar. And there was a chap put in charge of them called Ashpenaz. Ashpenaz. And the Bible tells us that Ashpenaz formed a really high opinion of Daniel. He thought he was a bright lad. He was someone that you could work with. And Daniel found that Ashpenaz was someone he could, in the words of Margaret Thatcher, he could do business with. Ashpenaz. And we need friends in the right places. We need to develop good relationships with people like the police, social services, the media. We need to let them see us doing good things in this community. We need to let them see us being generous, responsible, useful people, whilst not hiding the fact that Jesus provides the motivation for the good things that we do. Wonderful moment in the story of Daniel, where Nebuchadnezzar had had this dream, and none of his wise men could interpret it. And Nebuchadnezzar's normal reaction is, if in doubt, kill them all, they're a waste of space. And then he turns to Daniel and says, Daniel, what do you think? Daniel said, this is a tricky one. I think I can interpret this dream. Don't kill the wise men. Don't kill the wise men. Daniel is nothing like the wise men, the astrologers, whatever weird and wonderful magic tricks they used to try and play. But he's made a few friends there, hasn't he? Don't kill the wise men. He's made a few more friends. Let's build relationships in this weird world and show people that Christians can be trusted and that they're sensible people to deal with. Another way is tackling issues wisely. Remember Daniel being asked to eat that special food that came from the king's table? And I imagine that loads of that was full of all sorts of stuff that was forbidden to Jews. You know, Tesco burgers, all sorts of stuff that you wouldn't want to go near. Full of horse meat, forbidden things. He says to Ashpenaz, does he say, I cannot eat that stuff, I am forbidden by God. No, he doesn't. He says, Ashpenaz, I've got a problem with this food. You know, we Jews, we've got these things about food. Ashpenaz says, if I start feeding you different stuff and you get weak and weedy, I'm for the chop. And Daniel says, look, let's just try for a week. Can we just try for a week? Give us vegetables and things like that for a week. You can check us out, see how it works. He gives the guy a way out. He's working with somebody. He's tackling that issue in a way that is sensible, understands where the other guy's coming from. And after a week, he and his friends are looking more healthy and fit than everybody else. And everything's fine because God has come through. We need to tackle issues wisely in a non-Christian environment. And yet at the same time, we will stand firm on the big things. There will come times when we have to stand for our faith, come what may. Remember the story of that tells us how Daniel is forbidden to pray, and he carries on in an open window and prays to God exactly as he did before, knowing that he will face the lion's den. Like the same situation where everyone is ordered to bow down to the statue, and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego refuse, and they say this wonderful thing to King Nebuchadnezzar. They say, hey, King, we respect you enormously. But we believe God is able to save us from your fiery furnace. But even if he does not, we want you to know that we will never worship your gods or bow down to your statue. Okay? That's what they say because they've reached a point where they need to stand firm on the big things. And they see God come through for them as well. And we need to be standing together. Daniel and his three friends stand together in that alien environment as men of God. And we need to do the same. You know, the days when church is a bit of an optional extra for our families, and we turn up when we're not away for the weekend, those days are gone. It's not good enough to have church as a bit of an optional extra. A church like this needs to be a place where we stand together, where we stand for something together, where we have a mission together. And people who think they're going to be able to survive in this place on their own are kidding themselves, because we will need each other more than ever before. And this is something our young folks can teach us, because they are so good at working and spending time and doing things together. It is great to see a bunch of people like this, working, thinking, praying, doing things together. Many of us adults could learn lessons from that, but we need to be a church united, because increasingly, as the world around us falls apart, we need to be together. We need God to work with all of us. We need to be a church united. And finally, we need to be trusting God to act in power. You know, the things that God did in Daniel's life over there in Babylon were hugely powerful. He was hugely influential. The very fact that they stood for God and survived the lion's den and survived the fiery furnace resulted in King Nebuchadnezzar become, in his own slightly weird way, a believer in God. Nebuchadnezzar eventually acknowledged the God of Daniel. And the nation of Babylon began to change from the inside, because it went from being a weird alien nation to being the place where somehow God's attention was focused. And even as God was disciplining his people, even as God's people lived through the consequences of their disobedience, God's focus on them was redemptive in the nation in which they'd been sent. Incredible that even Babylon itself is renewed from the inside out because God's eyes are on his people and his people live for him. And we need to live in this society. We need to pray for it. We need to seek the best for it. We need to be the best citizens we can be. And we need to be prepared to say that we love this place. We love this broken place because God has put that love in our hearts. And we need to see our city and our nation renewed from the inside as people like us learn to live for God in an alien land. So can we do this? Can we do this? Will our young people do this? That's the question I'm asking this morning. I'm a grandparent, but the children of Israel were sent to Babylon for a couple of generations. And our nation is not going to get better in the time that you lot grow up and get married and have children and maybe even have grandchildren. You need to be living your lives in the way we've been describing today, living as the people of God. And we'll be praying for you every inch of the way as you grow up and do that. It's great to see what you're doing. Agreed? Agreed? Yeah, it's great to see what you're doing. And we long to see you doing more and more of it. It's not going to be possible anymore to go with the flow, because the flow will take us away from God, not towards God. We need to be different. And there'll be different challenges for every single one of us. But the challenge is to live for God, to work together as a church of God, and to rely on God like never before. Pat and the band are going to come and help us sing a song together called God is Able. Come on, Pat. God is able. God is with us. And that's such a truth that in all of this, in all we've talked about, in all the struggles and strains of this needy nation, God is with us, with his people. And then Hazel is going to come and lead us in some prayer for this nation, our young people, and our church. Let's worship God together, shall we? Thanks.